Blog Talk Radio.
About that will follow, and we'll like for you to
join us by calling in at 818-337-0016 or hit 1. Before we get started, like always, we'd just like to remind you that if we encounter any kind of technical difficulties or any kind of issues with our audio, that is an ongoing problem we're trying to work out. Right now, it's beyond our control, so just be patient. Let's fight through it and continue to move forward. That, too, is part of our legacy and our struggle to overcome obstacles that may confront us. So that is the order of the day, what I can do right now as the voice of MPH Radio. We want to give you something to think about as we talk about freedom and what it is, and we know that many people over centuries, many generations, they have died over this whole concept of what is freedom. And today, man and woman still fighting on this concept of what is freedom. So let's give you something to think about as it relates to this concept of freedom. Here are some individuals who gave their perspective on what is freedom. From Frederick Schiller, he stated, freedom exists only with power. Frederick Schiller, freedom exists only with power. And how does that concept match with your reality? Let's go to another second concept of freedom by Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass stated, knowledge makes a man unfit to be a slave. Knowledge makes a man unfit to be a slave. That was one of Frederick Douglass' conception of freedom. And we go to a general, John Stock, who stated that live free or die. Death is not the worst of evils. General John Stock stated, live free or die. Life is not the worst of evil. Okay, and the last one for the day is Osho, who stated, be, don't try to become. That's very simple. Just be. Don't try to overcome. We have given you four conceptions of what freedom is. How do those conceptions fit into your reality of freedom? So hopefully we have given you something to think about. And when we come back, we can come back with some Black Men Facts by MPH with Susie. You're listening to Missing Pages of History. We'll be right back.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
It's all that Peter goes after. the ism, kism game. Dinah go to heaven in a Jesus name, Lord. We know and we understand. Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light.
What you
gonna we gonna stand up for,
yeah,
all right?
Yeah,
so you better
get up.
Welcome back to MPH Radio. You're listening to the voice of Missing Pages of History. That's right. We want to encourage everyone to get up and stand up for their rights. Because if you don't, who will? So on that note, we'll make our transition to MPH Black Mini Facts. These are for Mini Facts for the week, which will be presented by Susie, who is a contributor and member. MPH Radio. We now will bring her in with this week Black Mini Facts. Susie, welcome to MPH Radio.
Good evening. This week's Mini Facts is coming from the PRSP 2021 calendar. And the first one starts with April the 4th, which is while organizing workers, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee in 1968. Also, another mini fact for April the 4th, Maya Angelou, distinguished author, was born in 1928. Okay, April the 5th, Booker T. Washington, African educator, born in 1856. April the 6th, Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania founded in 1959. Also, young Black Panther organizer Bobby Hutton killed fighting in Oakland, California in 1968. April the 7th, Charlotte Maxey, a founder of the ANC Women's League, was born in 1874. Another mini fact for the 7th is Mozilian Women in honor of the anniversary of Josina Michelle's death in 1971. And the last mini fact for April the 7th, the African freedom fighter Toussaint L. Louverture died in 1803. April the 8th, the ANC and the PAC banded in South Africa in 1960. And also on the 8th, Hank Aaron broke Beirut's U.S. baseball home run record in 1974. And the last mini fact for April the 9th is Paul Robeson, Pan-African activist and artist, was born in 1898. And finally, the African Methodist Episcopal Church was founded in 1816. Those are your mini facts for April the 4th through April the 9th.
We'd like to thank Susie for her excellent jobs of MPH Black Mini Facts for the week. We hope that you took some notes and you are reminding that you have your powerful history and you learned these historical significance of contributions that our people have made to humanity. What we're going to quickly do is, at this point in time, we're going to make our transition to Mr. Ali Joyner. He has a message to the community. At this particular time, we'd like to welcome Brother Alex to MPH Radio. Welcome, Brother Alex.
Thank you, and good day, Mr. Robinson. And I would like to thank Susie, the staff of Missing Pages of History, the invited guests, the listeners and callers, for allowing me again to speak to you in this moment with my thoughts in writing. For the past few weeks, the nation and the world have been watching the George Floyd murder trial. Before I say anything else, please let us give a moment of silence to the Floyd family and to all families who have experienced the loss of a loved one during police interaction. And we give a moment. Thank you. Hundreds of black males and females have died a horrendous death during the confrontation by peace officers of the United States in every state. This has caused a great emotional distress in many. And if you need help, please seek it. Our emotional health is extremely important to our physical health and mental well-being. As a child in school, I learned to sing the song, America, my country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty. Oh, thee I sing, land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. Then I learned the abolitionist version, written by E.G. Duncan in 1843, from my cousin, James Bumpty Richardson. My country, 'tis of thee, stronghold of slavery, oh, thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, where men's rights derive. From every mountainside, thy deeds shall ring. My country, thee, where all men are born free, if white their skin. I love thy hills and dales, the mounts and pleasant fields, but hate the Negro seal as foul as sin. And I encourage you to read the rest. I have the deepest sympathy for the death of Brother George Floyd and anyone else that died at the hands of the police, as their lives have meaning and purpose. We cannot let them be forgotten. History. All life matters, as God gave life to all that exist. Land where our fathers died. Tribute to George Floyd. Hanging one slave, it appears, does not deter the next. Well, what of it? The first one is at least disposed of, and the rest will be taught a lesson of the white man's supremacy. Willie Lynch. I freed 1,000 slaves. I could have freed 1,000 more if only they knew they were slaves. Harriet Tubman. So-called God-fearing Christian slave pirates kidnapped free Africans and brought them to the West Indies, South and North America in this horrendous middle passage of history. Only the mental and physically strongest black Africans survived the savage and barbaric torture they endured at the hands of their white Christian American slave owners who only sought wealth and pleasure from their enslavement. In 1604, King James I of England convened the Hampton Court Conference to create his version of the Bible, although two other versions had been in print for years. The King James Version would be based on his opinions and beliefs and not necessarily on the facts. It was published in the year 1612. 7 years after it was published, and Christian North American slave trade began in 1619, bringing the first Africans to Jamestown, Virginia, to be traded for supplies and provisions. In the early 1600s, less than 10% of the world's population was literate in English. Therefore, only the king's ordained preachers could read this version of the Bible. The Bibles that the slave captains carried on their ships were poorly read and understood. Furthermore, the kidnapped Africans that were being transported around the world would be brutally butchered if their new masters thought they could read or write. Therefore, all the information about the Bible and Christianity was given to the enslaved Africans in the form of Thus Say Master. American history textbooks do not address the more than 250 chronicled slave revolts between 1526 and 1860 as white slave owners lived in fear and paranoia of when their slaves may escape or slay them in the night. This fear led to the formation of the slave patrol or better known as our local police force today. These so-called peace officers were savage, brutal, and had no compassion for the fair treatment of slaves captured by them. Instead, they thrived on the fear of the slave they captured. They would bring him back to the plantation on a whip, beaten and chained like an animal. Then they would hang the slave in front of everyone on the plantation. If other slaves tried to speak out to help the condemned man, they were whipped, beaten, and hanged as well. Many whites that spoke out against this treatment of enslaved Africans were whipped, beaten, and hanged, as they were called nigger lovers. They would be distanced from the community and shunned in church for showing compassion to free or enslaved Africans. These attitudes of hate and misinformation about Christian love and missionary work in the world has been a major problem for hundreds of years. George Floyd was a son, a father, a man who hurt no one. As he explained to the officer who attempted to put him into custody over a fake $20 bill, "I'm a good guy. Please, officer, don't shoot me." George Floyd didn't want to die that day, but he was murdered. He knew, like most black men know, that for hundreds of years, black men died unnecessarily while being detained by peace officers of the United States. For 9 minutes and 29 seconds, we saw a black man plead for his life. He begged to comply with the officer, but his pleas were ignored. The officers were in charge and in control. The mindset of the officer that knelt on his neck seemed to have been to ignore training, procedure, humanity, and the pleas from the bystanders. They passionately cried out for the officers to provide medical assistance to a man who was being murdered in front of them by one sworn to protect them. But God-fearing compassion was not to be that day. George Floyd knew he was dying, a most horrendous death, by a white officer, knee on his neck. Just like so many of our forefathers who cried out when the rope of oppression was hung around their neck, they finally surrendered. They knew they couldn't win. Their life would soon be squeezed out of them. So they called out to God and their mama, as George Floyd did that day, in front of all who witnessed his grievous murder. Our ancestors have never received sympathy, justice, or reparation for their murders. We will await the final recording of the jury and see if America has a heart with history or the same no dignity, no compassion for blacks in police custody. We have come a long way from the fear of slave patrol, yet we are now patrolled by ones who need more sensitivity and compassionate training to evolve into a better police force so the communities they serve. George Floyd's death has shaken up the world for some law enforcement officers who said his death was wrong and unnecessary. Regardless of the verdict, America has to wake up and acknowledge its wrongs about race and religion. Would George Floyd still be alive if he was white? When will the color of our skin stop condemning us to death? Rest in peace, George Floyd. Justice will be done one day. And I thank you so much.
You have been listening to Brother Ali Joyner. That's his message to the community. At this particular time, we're going to take a station break with music, with a message, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion as we're going to speak to our theme tonight, Stop the Dismantling of Free Speech Pacifica. You listen to Missing Pages of History. We'll be right back.
Show them all the beauty. beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody searching for heroes. People need someone to look up to. Never found anyone who fulfilled my needs. A lonely place to be. And so I learned to depend on me. I decided long ago never to walk in anyone's shadow. If I fail, if I succeed, at least I'm living right in life. No matter what they take from me, they can't take away my dignity. Because of greatness, love of all is happening to me. I found the greatness, love of all.
That's right. It's the greatest love of all when you love your people and love humanity. This is a lesson that not only we must teach our children, but we must teach the world. We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio, and our theme today is Stop the Dismantling of Free Speech Pacifica. We have with us now our special guest today, Sister Cora Hope, who is the producer and host of the show Pan-African Journal, but she's going to talk to us a little bit about not only what's going on in the world, but particularly discuss this importance of this issue of free speech. But before we get into that segment, we first would like to welcome this young lady to our program, and there are some other issues or information that she's going to share with you that will show the need for having access to the airways and access to information. So first and foremost, Sister Cool, we'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. Welcome.
Greetings. Good evening. Good afternoon, Heather. Thank you, Brother Lee, and shout out to your entire audience, and especially to the children been sequestered and sort of social distancing during this pandemic. It's been very difficult for our young people. So I want to say to all the parents and caretakers of our children, hold on, hold on, just hold on. We've been through difficult moments in history before, and we will come out better on the other side of this COVID pandemic.
Sister Cool, I know that you live in the state of Texas, well, particularly Houston. There's issues going on with this question of voting disenfranchisement. Can you talk a little bit about what's going on in the state of Texas as it relates to underserved communities?
Yeah, you know, during the 2020 election, a lot of things happened with regard to voting in Texas. They worked very hard to limit the access of Black and Brown community in 2020, and of course, they're working overtime to make it more difficult for people to vote. So, you know, basically in 2020, in all of Harris County, which has, you know, I think Harris County has almost 6 million people, 6.5, something like that. But in Houston, which has roughly maybe half that population, there was only one there was only one drop box for the entire city of Houston. To do, you know, people who got their ballots by mail and they wanted to drop them off, so they limited that. And then our mayor, who's very progressive, and our county judge decided, well, you know what, we'll do drive-in voting then. So now they've introduced a bill to make that illegal. Because of the pandemic, it was an excellent idea for people to, since they only had one drop box, somebody thought, well, okay, the voting precincts can bring this electronic tool to people's car where they can vote from their car. So now the state legislator here in Texas, they worked very hard to make that now illegal to vote, to have drive-through voting. But of course, the rhetoric is that all of this is being done to make voting safe and secure. And how safe and secure does it need to be when you're disenfranchising an entire population of people? And also, you know, our community was impacted by the service as well. In many of the Black and Brown neighborhoods, the postal boxes were taken, and to my understanding, they have not been returned. So that was a problem. But, I tell you, when these things happen, grassroots organizations and other organizations, they have to go back to the drawing board and figure out other ways to reach the people and to support them. And that's all there is. You know, in a sense, they're playing chess, and we have to play chess as well and play offense and understand that these restrictions are not going to go away anytime soon. And just like our ancestors did, you know, they figured out a way to persevere, so will we.
And also, Sister Akul, we were talking earlier about a particular death by a sister who was declared mentally ill, and the whole world never heard about this case. Can you give us the history of that case? And this is why information is important and have access to the airways, because there are so many things going on in our community. But if our people are not informed, they become very difficult. Not only do you think, also become very difficult to react in a proper way. So talk a little bit about this young lady and her case that most people may have never heard of before.
Well, a couple years ago, Pamela Turner was killed in Houston. And I don't know if it really got a lot of attention. She was killed on May 13th, 2019. By an officer whose name was Dela Cruz. Time Pam Turner was 44 years old. This officer was claimed he was on patrol, and she was walking her dog, but everyone in her community knew that she had mental health challenges. She didn't always have mental health challenges. She was a beautiful, vibrant young woman, and at some point she retired from her job when she began to
encounter mental health issues. And, you know, she had two lovely children, teenagers, and she was walking her dog. And for some reason, there are conflicting stories. The media continues to write that she had arrest warrants. However, her lawyer said there were no arrest warrants. So what's interesting about the shaping of this story is how the media will follow the line of the statement that's released by the Sheriff's Department. Even though they have no way to vet that statement, they will print it as though it's the gospel, knowing that in many of these cases, once they begin to unravel, there was wrongdoing so that we elect and pay to protect and serve, supposedly. So again, in this one story that I even read recently, which I'm going to write to the journalist, she continues to repeat this narrative that Ms. Turner had arrest warrants out. And so it just doesn't make any sense because the officer lived in her apartment complex. So why would he didn't have any authority from a judge or anyone else to execute an arrest warrant for her. That's not why he was there. He lived there. So his line was that, oh, you know, she had arrest warrant. So I was there to arrest her walking her dog. You live in the complex. So it's just too many unanswered questions. But anyway, he claimed that she grabbed his taser. However, there was a video taken of the incident that showed some other things. She did cry out, I'm pregnant, please don't kill me, to something to that effect. And he shot her. He just opened fire and killed her, point blank, a woman walking her dog that he knew had mental health issues that he approached at night. So, you know, all the recent pushback and uprising with regard to police misconduct, police brutality, and people being murdered at the hands of officers that we pay to protect us. Last year, he was indicted for her murder, Officer Dela Cruz. Again, he shot her multiple times in March. And so he was indicted. But the police department, they have not fired this man. So it's really interesting. Most people, if they work in the environment and they're indicted, the next thing that happens is they get fired or at least laid off. But this man has been able to, some kind of strange way, keep his job, according to this article that he's, I don't know if he's still on duty. It doesn't explain or stipulate which one, but he has not been fired at all. So a grand jury again indicted him in September of 2020, and they have not fired him. So I imagine if there was more public attention and public pressure, perhaps they will. Her children are now saying that, you know, on the day to celebrate her birth, they, you know, here they are asking for justice in her case. And it's, you know, another one of these stories. They released 46 balloons in the sky in honor of her birthday. And it was announced that her lawyer will be filing a lawsuit against this department, which is in Baytown, Texas, not right outside of Houston. It's in a suburban area. So Juan Dela Cruz was the person who shot her and killed her on that fateful night.
And her name again was
Pamela Turner. Her name was Miss Pamela Turner. Yeah, that was her name.
Okay.
And yeah, so, you know, if you want to know more, I think there's an Instagram page set up for her. And I remember seeing Ben Crump on that page talking about her case, and saying that, you know, there hasn't been justice in her case and that they were going to, you know, file charges or file a lawsuit, rather. And he also stated, you know, that There's absolutely no reason that the city should have stood up and said this is not going to be tolerated. But, again, this man still has his job.
Okay.
And that's in the case of Pamela Turner.
Good. And we want to make sure she don't become a missing pages. And what we want to do is encourage our listening audience, please share the word. And like anything else, you know, the more it's exposed, the better chances we can have to bring about justice. And it's one of the reasons why it's very critical for us to have access to the airways where we can define our own phenomena. So what we're going to do right now, Sister Cool, we're going to take a quick station break. And when we come back, we want to talk a little bit about what's going on with this whole concept of dismantling this whole idea of free speech as relates to Pacifica, as well as what can people do. So we're going to discuss that when we come back. You listen to MPH Radio, and we'd like to remind everybody that we too cry for the mothers and the fathers who have lost their sons and daughters on unjust behavior by the criminal justice system. And in that memory, we'd like to play this song to all the mothers.
When I was pregnant in jail, I thought I was going to have a baby and the baby would never be with me, but I was acquitted a month and 3 days before Tupac was born. I was real happy because I had a son.
When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was the fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said tears with my baby sister. Over the years we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who's thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a queen, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. I finally understand for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did it, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. Dear mama. Nobody tell us it was fair. No love for my daddy cause the coward wasn't there. He passed away and I didn't cry cause my anger wouldn't let me feel for a stranger. They say I'm wrong and I'm heartless, but all along I was looking for a father, he was gone. I hung around with the thugs, and even though they showed a young brother love, I moved out, started really hanging. I needed money of my own, so I sang it. I ain't guilty, cause even though I said it feels good putting money in your mailbox, I love paying rent when the rent's due. I hope you got the diamond necklace that I sent to you. Cause when I was low, you was there for me. You never left me alone because you cared for me. And I can see you coming home after work late. You're in the kitchen trying to fix us a hot plate. Just working with the scraps she was given. And mama made miracles every Thanksgiving. But now the road got rough, you're alone. Trying to raise two bad kids on your own. And there's no way I can pay you back. But my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. And dear mama, you all appreciate it. And I reminisce, cause through the drama I can always depend on my mama. And when it seems that I'm hopeless, you say the words that can get me back in focus. When I was sick as a little kid, to keep me happy there's no limit to the things you did. And all my childhood memories are full of all the sweet things you did for me. And even though I act crazy, I gotta thank the Lord that you made me.
There are no words that can express how I feel. You never kept a secret, always stayed real. And I appreciate how you raised me and all the extra love that you gave me. I wish I could take the pain away. If you can make it through the night, there's a brighter day. Everything will be alright if you hold on. It's a struggle every day, gotta roll on. And there's no way I can pay you back, but my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Don't you know we love you,
dear
lady.
Mama.
I'd like to welcome you back to Pace Radio, and of course, our cries go out to all of the family members of those who have been unjustly murdered or recently assassinated, because every individual is special and should be treated special. So we're talking to Sister Cool Hope, who's going to be talking to us about this whole issue of stopping and dismantling the free speech of Pacifica. Sister Hope, before we go into Father, we'd be remiss if we would like to ask you if you could share just a little something about our audience, about who you are. How would you describe yourself?
Thank you. Well, thank you, Brother Lee, for inviting me on today. Well, basically, I'm just I'm a reporter, journalist. I've been working independently in the Houston area for a number of years, and got my start in public radio on Texas Southern University, which is a black college campus, historically HBU. And after that, I left there and went to Pacifica, and left Pacifica at one point and then came back after the first lawsuit, which was around, I guess it was around 2000? Goodness, it's been that long. I guess it was around 2000. Wow, I can't believe time has passed so quickly. Yeah, maybe 2000, 2005, somewhere around there, there was a major lawsuit to get more participation of people of color in Pacifica. There were people very active in that lawsuit, and Pacifica was restructured to where if you become a member, $25, then you would be able to vote on your board. And also the national board would be able to be selected by the local board. So all of that's changed over the years because there are some people that don't like the way governance is happening throughout the network, pretty much the same parallel that we see that's happening in Washington, D.C. It seems as though when one side loses, they can't wrap their brains around losing. So then they want to move the goalposts or change the rules to give themselves an advantage. I would say the same scenario is playing out with Pacifica. I guess the only difference is that many of us thought, oh, my God, you know, these were supposed to be liberals. We thought they were more progressive than what we're seeing. But over the years, we've noticed that the same sort of racist microaggression, just some of the same tactics that you see in other environments, it exists in our network. And, you know, maybe some people were naive, including myself, thinking that, okay, we're progressives here. Some people are Pan-Africanists. Some people are nationalists. Some people are white progressives. Some people are environmentalists. You have people within the network who work in many areas of social justice, what makes Pacifica interesting. Throughout the network, you can find anyone who's working on death penalty issues or houseless issues or mental health or just you name it. There is someone within our five stations and our 200 affiliates that you can grab a content for a story. So, again, we're a network. But lately, for the last 2 years, there's been a group. They have restructured under many names. Right now, they're going by a name, New Day, a New Day Pacifica. And they claim that they can make Pacifica new again. It's almost like the slogan, Making America Great Again. And what they'd like to do is to dismantle Pacifica, possibly get rid of the stations in New York and D.C., which are mostly black and brown, and keep the stations here in Houston, L.A., and Berkeley. This challenge is being driven from the folks in Houston, along with some folks from Berkeley. They have sued Pacifica multiple times to change the structure and how they operate. It is not perfect, Brother Lee. The Pacifica structure is no more perfect than our government structure here in the United States, but it is a working tool to run the network and to invite many groups to have a seat at the table to talk about governance. Most people, Brother Lee, they want to be behind the mic. Most people feel that that's where the power is, being behind the mic, being able to talk to the people. That's one aspect of radio, but anyone can tell you the real power in media lies in that board of directors, lies in the people who contribute money, and lies in the people who make decisions on how that media apparatus is going to run. That is the first wall of authority and power. It is not being behind the microphone. The microphone is just the end product of all those other things. And, you know, sometimes in our community, folks don't want to do that work. We don't necessarily want to be at the table. We don't want to go to the meetings. We don't want to listen to the minutes and the secretary. We don't want to read the bylaws. We don't want to talk about restructuring. Those things sometimes we just don't want to do. But we have to find people who have that level of interest in governance in order for us to be represented at the table. And I'm saying that because this summer there will be yet another referendum to restructure Pacifica. As I mentioned when we started this conversation, this group that continues to change their name and go to court in California to sue Pacifica claim that they are acting in the best interest of Pacifica. But when you look at their operation, they're mostly all gray-headed, you know, white folks who have been around for a minute and who are not able to make a difference. So my thought is, even if I try to be objective, particularly when I look at the folks from Houston who are involved in this lawsuit, and I've looked at their pattern over the years, some of them have been a chair of our national board. Some of them have, one person was the chair and the executive director of our national board. He fired our first black manager at our station. We had not had a black manager in 40 years. Never had they had a black manager. And he, Dr. Obadike Kamau was his name. He was a longtime contributor to Pacifica, long before I got there, educator, scholar, activist. He was there 3 months and was escorted out by the police. And this was long before people started posting stuff online about white folks calling the police on people. This man was a law-abiding citizen, a scholar activist, just cream of the crop, okay, when it came to selecting someone to govern our station in Houston and to manage our station. He knew everybody, and all of a sudden he wasn't good enough because he didn't, quote, raise enough money in 3 months. So these same people that were involved in calling the police on him are involved in, making everyone believe online that they can make Pacifica great again and give Pacifica a new day. But based on what I've seen, I don't see a new day coming. I see a reversal of some racist politics to continue to suppress the black voice and to continue to suppress progressive voices. And, basically that's what I see. So I encourage people who are listening, and you may say to me, oh, you know, Sister Kua, that's okay. We have Facebook. We have Instagram. We have Twitter. No, we don't have any of those things. They are platforms that we don't own, that we get to go on and express ourselves. And the moment you say something they don't like, they will lock you out forever. The difference with those platforms and public radio is public radio is governed by your public dollars. You have a say-so. You do. And unlike the capitalists who run social media, those are corporate, for-profit companies that we will never have a say-so in governing or a say-so in their structure. Now, every now and then, for instance, in this recent presidential election, we noticed how they allowed Mr. 45 to say and do almost anything. And, you know, it was at the end of his run that they decided to take him off. Well, I was reading online recently, and I think the Supreme Court ruled that he could not be banned from social media. Even somebody who was, you know, asking people to use, suggesting that people become violent, all of a sudden he can't be banned from social media. So, again, when you look at the politics around social media and the politics around turning on your radio, listening to activists, listening to scholar activists, listening to historians and artists and all these different voices that we have, very, very different from social media. No one will say to you, oh, you're banned from listening to Pacifica. You can never turn us on again. You know, you won't hear all the ads that you see on YouTube and you see now in your feed on many of these platforms. You won't hear that because we are still unadulterated. We're still one of the few nonprofit media outlets that resist corporate funding to this day, even though Pacifica is having serious financial challenges because of COVID and the lack of outreach and the lack of people, you know, pouring money into the network. And the fact that they don't have their hand out because they don't want everybody's money. So that is impressive enough for me to stay engaged because imagine that you have a group of people who are interested in staying true to free speech to the point where they are not willing to take money on no level for under any circumstances. They still believe in the fact that the people should fund what we say. And at this point, that's what's happening. Now, once it's restructured, or if it's restructured, I don't know what will occur. But the people who are trying to restructure Pacifica, they did get a court order to have another bylaws referendum in this summer. And if that side looks out, then Pacifica will be completely restructured. There will be four white folks possibly running the entire network. That means five stations and 200 affiliates. Initially, as I mentioned, we have boards at all five stations, and each of those boards send four people to the national board, right? So that's 20 people on the national board, and I think they have a couple affiliate seats as well, and then a couple of non-voting seats. So then you have, let's say, roughly 20-plus people running an entire network of five stations and an additional 200 affiliates. Well, that will be cut down to four if these people have their way. So my argument to that is this. These same four white folks can't even manage the stations in their own signal area. For example, our station in Houston has been closed since COVID. They're unable to manage that station, get it open and running again. How are they going to manage trying to run a whole network? Well, simple. They'll end up unloading some of those stations, possibly. That's one scenario. And the other is that the format will definitely change because they've been wanting to corporatize Pacifica Sound. They don't want the various community shows that are on. They prefer to put a couple of folks on the air and streamline it. where, you know, everything that's relevant in San Francisco or relevant in L.A. will be relevant in Houston and New York. Some of that niche programming that Pacifica offers is important so the community can feel empowered and have access. And then, of course, with the broader shows that are on, some people listen to those shows as well. So free speech is under fire. And if Pacifica goes, the landscape of what we know as free speech will change forever. Because I cannot imagine in 2021 that you would have people committed to setting up 5 stations and 200 affiliate stations, and they don't want to take corporate money. I don't even know of an entity in America that would submit to something like that, because everything is driven by dollars here as opposed to principle. So I say, based on principle, let's think about protecting the institution of free speech. Many of my friends say to me in Houston, well, you know, we don't listen to this racist station here anymore. However, we do have WPFW in Washington, D.C., mostly Black and brown station. In New York, we have a very progressive mixed schedule of programming there. Same thing in California. Berkeley, another story. You know, it's kind of little something there for the community, not much. So there is a lot at stake. And if you want to just get a sample of what Pacifica offers to the community, go to WPFW, WPFW.org. And listen to that station in Washington, D.C. It is off the chain, honestly. The sister who's the programmer there, Katia Stitt, she's the daughter of the late jazz musician, Sonny Stitt. And I'm telling you, she is not playing. So, in fact, on April 7th, she did all-day features on Billie Holiday and told her story, not just through music, but also through personal narrative. So it was really good and very refreshing to see someone lift Billy up beyond, you know, a 1.5 hour movie, because that's what we've done in this town, in this country. We've allowed our culture, our political contributions, we've allowed so much to be reduced to a microwave minute. And sometimes our people have little tolerance of hearing our whole story. So I want to encourage many families out there, if you want your children to know about our contributions and our greatness, we must teach them. Do not wait on the public schools. Do not wait on the institutions that you would normally rely on, because we're in a pandemic. So there's a lot there. You can go to the Pacifica Archives. There are so many Malcolm speeches, King speeches, Fannie Lou Hamer, so much there that you can introduce your children to. I have, you know, trained my grandsons to be listeners, because everything is not going to always be visual. So I'll put on a Fannie Lou Hamer speech, and it's rough. I don't play all of it because it's rough when she talks about being beaten darn near to death for registering Black people to vote. But I want them to understand the price that our ancestors paid for us to breathe this air in this place we call America. You know, a heavy, heavy price was paid, and I want them to understand that. And we, Pacifica, I thank whoever decided in the 60s to record these stories. Many of the speeches you hear of Malcolm and King were recorded by Pacifica, and Pacifica is open source, so they don't care about putting it on the internet and people reproducing it and calling it their own. They were one of the that history. Most of the media was racist and they could care less. But Pacifica was there, and had to, you know, there's so much audio there. There's a lot there. There's too much for me to talk about in this moment. But one of my favorite pieces that I play from time to time is a talk with John Coltrane. And I think he was coming from the airport or wherever, and a Pacifica reporter was allowed to ride with him. And he's just doing this off-the-cuff interview, but it humanized him beyond just, you know, being this great musician, because he was talking about just his process, his family, just so many other things. And so I just really want to invite you to go on to our archives to check us out and see what's there. And, you know, before I close out this conversation, I do want to mention that our Pacifica station in New York was shut down 2 years ago by some of these same operatives who want to shut down the entire network. They actually went to New York City, padlocked with everybody, cut their signal. Now, mind you, they didn't get any permission from the FCC at all to do any of this. And FCC, for the listeners, this is the Federal Communications Commission that regulates terrestrial radio. They got no permission to do any of this, and they did it. They did it and took the people off the air and then put that station on the Internet. Well, the folks in New York, they weren't taking it laying down. They filed a lawsuit. They were able to get an injunction against these operatives. They asked for their equipment back. I don't think they ever got it back. They had to buy new equipment. But just the fact that when you watch what happened in the Capitol, that happened with our station, that some people who were working for our station, some people who were on our national board, decided they weren't going to wait on democracy. They weren't going to wait on a vote, but they themselves would take matters into their own hands and fly all the way out to New York and dismantle free speech in New York. That's bold. So these same folks are involved in now a court-ordered situation in trying to change the bylaws and change the way Pacifica functions. So again, I cannot say enough to the audience about what's at stake with regard to free speech in America, because Pacifica is one of the founders of free speech. It was the first public radio, long before NPR. NPR was sort of patterned off Pacifica, but they took a different route, you know, their reporting and the way they're doing things. But now when you see what's happening with the social justice movement, NPR can't ignore that anymore. But so I just want to let folks know you can go onto Pacifica's website, pacifica.org, to find out more. You know, it was born in the late 40s, founded by Lou Shields, who was a war resistant and an objector to the war. He was a newsman and was fired from his mainstream reporting job when he refused to misrepresent information. And that's when he got the idea to create a listener-sponsored radio station, a new one that had never been implemented out in California in 1949. He went out there and created the Pacifica station and went on the air from Berkeley, California. And then he went to Los Angeles to start another Pacifica station there in Los Angeles in 1959. And, you know, and then it just kind of happened from there. So we got Pacifica in L.A., I mean, in Berkeley, L.A., in New York, Houston, and then D.C., Washington, D.C., was the last Pacifica station to join our network. And as you see, we've always had problems. I did not mention in the opening that twice our transmitter was bombed here in Houston by the Klan. And the guy was so bold when he bombed it, he actually called into the station to say that he did it. And I can't recall if they end up taking him to jail. He served time for it, I believe, the second time. I'm not quite sure. So this whole thing of homegrown terrorism, we've seen that just, you know, we've witnessed that within just trying to operate a radio station. People don't talk about it much, but that was the talk of town to you know, witness an American station being threatened in that way by a citizen. And so most recently, a couple of years ago, on Sunday, you know, the time that I'm on, after I left, a couple hours after I left, someone actually shot into the station. and the sister that was on the air, the bullet just missed her. And I think she ended up quitting after that. So free speech has always been under attack for a number of reasons. And it's time that we, as a community, stand up to fight back. That's the name of the group that that's fighting for the soul of Pacifica. It's called Pacifica Fight Back. They're fighting to make sure that people understand what's at stake.
Mr. Sakura, before you leave, I've actually answered two questions. I have one caller that's been on for a while, and you can take this one question. But I would like to address, for you to address, how can they support this particular movement, Pacific Radio, for not changing its present form? And also, I would like for you to talk about how can we support your particular program, and talk just briefly about your program, Pan-African Journal, and how people can listen to it. But let me take this one caller, and then we'll come back. I'd like for you to address those last 2 points, if that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Caller 4600. Call, the last four numbers is 4600. Your question or comment, please.
Well, I was going to make a comment. And how are you today?
Quick little call. How are you doing, sir?
Okay. How are you?
Yeah, one of the ways you start to see the oppression of free speech is on a common carrier called Internet, as it applies to social media like Facebook and Twitter, where if you say something that apparently doesn't go with their community standards, and I don't know who had the input in establishing those community standards, but a common carrier is like the telephone. And what we see they're doing is absolutely a deprivation of free speech, whereas people should have an option to choose whether they want to listen to it or not. So your comment on that, please.
Can you... you're talking about the standards, the community standards that have now been implemented on social media?
Yeah. Well, they put you on one day in jail, seven days in jail.
Yeah, I commented on that earlier. Basically, there is no free speech on social media, in a sense. There isn't. There's the illusion of free speech until you step over this line. This really gray line. For instance, I remember seeing a sister on, I guess it was Facebook. It's one of the reasons why I'm not online right now, real too tough. This sister was holding her weapons online. She wasn't brandishing her weapons. She went out to the range and whatever gun she had, you know, she said she had permission, a permit to use it. And she was just, you know, standing there posing with her weapons. And little did we know, after that, that sister ended up being arrested for what? I don't know. And then you see what happened in Washington, D.C. These people take their weapons to go home. They get to go home. They get to, you know, hide their weapons and fry their credit cards. And I mean, they did all kind of stuff. They get to evade arrest, and they weren't even arrested. So I don't quite understand how they differentiate a person posing with a gun online who's not aiming the gun at anyone. She wasn't threatening anyone. She was just posing with a weapon that she owned. How does that get you arrested? And that's what happened to this sister. I'm not sure where she's at or what happened, because at this time it was sort of early in the game. I think this was maybe 3 or 4 years ago that I saw this. So there is a disparaging way in which African Americans have been treated online, especially by Facebook, and you know, more than the others. Facebook, in a sense, they have censored more people of color than they have or African American people for their comments or for their stance on social justice. And you see how they have allowed these Proud Boys and all these other groups to go on and on and on and make. So there needs to be some standard, and I think what has to happen is that just like they have a community standard online, there needs to be a community standard in our community that checks these digital platforms. And we don't have enough advocacy to deal with that, or understanding and how that works. So that's what I was saying about public radio. We don't understand that your voice can be heard at the board level. If there's something you don't like or something else you'd like to see, you can vote it up or down, or you can write letters or make your voice be heard at the board meetings. Most of them are online. So many of these groups, they bank on us. They count on us not being engaged. I started out by saying that, you know, often we're not engaged at the governance level. So I think, you know, going forward, perhaps we can look at, and I don't want to admonish us and say, oh, we're wrong for not doing so, because some of this is the new awakening for our communities. And even for myself, once I began to realize and look at the boards of these institutions, and you don't see enough of our presence. And if you don't see us, then we won't have people advocating for us as well. And even when you do see people who look like us, it doesn't mean that they're going to advocate for the community. Some of these folks are there because it's a position of prestige. And you can kind of snuff those folks out easily because they see you coming and they run away from you. They don't want to hear what you're talking about because someone, you know, they have another agenda. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but until we get organized to respond to these platforms and asking to for a process so that we can understand who gets to be in Facebook jail or not and how these things are selected, there has to be some pushback and accountability, brother. That's the bottom line.
Okay, let me take the last one, Daphne, sister. We'll let you make the last comment. Last two comments, your question. Alex, you have a comment question for the sister. Alex, the mic is yours.
Yes, I sure would. And I'm honored today, and I thank you for being a part of the program ever so much, because the information you're giving today, a lot of us don't know anything about communications as far as radio and media and journalism and writing. All has an effect on free speech. And so when we go out...
You're welcome, brother. Thank you.
Yes. And when we go out in the public and say different things, you know, to people, then you have a tendency to have some people love you, have some people confused, and have some people hate you. So if we're not attentive to these board meetings, because like she said, that is the most important thing where the decisions are being made. And if we're not attentive to that area, yes, radio stations that we love, a podcast that we love, different areas of the media may be shut down, even if they've given us valuable history lessons or valuable news that's happening within our community, such as voting rights and everything else. And so I appreciate you being here today, but can you just, again, elaborate on how important is the media to voting, because it seems like the whole state of Georgia came out to vote once it got into the media and social media and everything. It just seemed like to expand, and a state that had never went that way all of a sudden came forth. So, again, can you give us just a little bit in depth on how important that was?
Okay, brother. Well, thank you so much for your question and your analysis and your brilliance, and thank you for listening and supporting Brother Lee and his platform. I often said to my children, I have two daughters, I said, the first form of media is yourself. When you look at your face in the mirror, what goes on in your home, what you choose to take out of your home, and you verbalize to others, and what you choose to keep to yourself. Never forget the power of the word of mouth. I don't care what kind of media they have out here. The word of mouth is still the most powerful form of media that God has given to man. So we must not forget, because once those platforms go away, there's nothing that will stop you from calling your neighbor or calling your sister or brother saying, pass the word on. Because one day, you know, we're getting spoiled by these platforms, and we are getting very dependent that they'll always be there. I don't trust them in that way. I think that we need to understand that Stacey Abrams put in work, and she was on the ground in Georgia. and the sisters were on the ground in Georgia, the children, the brothers. I mean, they understood that change had to happen. I think the best thing they did in Georgia was to cheat Stacey Abrams of that election for governor, because Kemp won how many millions of votes, but Abrams lost just within thousands of votes. They weren't millions, they were thousands. And she said, I was mad for about a week or two. Then I said, look, let me not get mad, let me get busy. And she thought of a plan to have a grassroots effort to organize voters. Has it been done before? Of course. When you look at Ella Baker and Fannie Lou Hamer, Ida B. Wells, and all the others, Bayard Rustin and the Pullman Porters, we've done this work before. It doesn't seem like it because our memory is not attached to the stories, to the narratives. Our memory is being fed by what we see electronically. So brothers and sisters, if you're online and if you have any skills, please learn how to video, learn how to edit so you can be a part of the team to get our stories out there. Our stories must be told. Get stories out there about A. Philip Randolph, the Pullman Porters. Get about Harry Belafonte and Sidney Poitier funding the civil rights movement, as well as Aretha Franklin and Cicely Tyson and all the other people who had resources who took care of that movement in the background. We have to get these stories out there because we cannot depend on our oppressor or our adversary to tell our stories. So that's my only challenge with social media. We tend to pass around the stories that are dictated from the networks. And I don't even give them free airtime and call their name. I'll just call them the networks and all of these other Europeanized platforms. So, the word of mouth and creating our own narratives is very important. With regard to voting, getting back to that, that's how it started. It started with a grassroots effort. And then, of course, it became explosive on social media as well. But the ground plan was already in place by the time that it got to social media. Social media was just an added value to some groundwork that was planned. So, we've done some serious work in our community, and I trust and believe that we will continue to do so. I just think that we must understand that social media is a tool, that radio, which is why they have destroyed so many of our black-owned radio stations, radio is what to this day we move and groove and react to what we hear on the radio, as well as social media. But radio is still very, very powerful, which is why we have so few black-owned radio stations left. The Nielsen's ratings, I don't know if y'all know this, but Bob Law was involved in suing the Nielsen's because they were intentionally giving our stations false ratings, which made it difficult for them to get advertising dollars. So a lot of black-owned stations lost their stations because they couldn't get advertisers and they couldn't get their numbers up because Nielsen intentionally showed low numbers. So that information is available online. So we can't believe the hype. We cannot, like my grandmother used to say, don't believe your lying eyes. And I was confused, like, what is she talking about? Don't believe your lying eyes, meaning everything you see online, please vet it. Vet it. There was a story going around that the president of Ghana stated that the coronavirus was fake and this and that. That was a false story. So when you read something and if it sounds too outlandish and it sounds too far out, it's probably fabricated. Because don't forget, there's an army of people out there spreading disinformation and misinformation on social media. Unfortunately, on Pacifica Radio, our information is vetted. You will probably rarely hear people intentionally give people misleading and false information. That is a huge problem in social media that we have not addressed as a community.
In closing, Sister Hope, can you again tell our listening audience how can we support this movement to stop the dismantling of free speech as relates to Pacifica, and talk a little bit about how can we heal your program, Pan-African Journal.
Thank you, Brother Lee. Yes, if you want more information about what's going on with Pacifica, you can go to the website. Pacifica Fight Back is the website. Pacifica Fight Back. Also, with regard to my program here locally, it is Pan-African Journal. You can go to kpft.org. And by the way, Pacifica was the first station to stream their shows on the Internet, the very first one. We sort of, I'm not going to say we created Internet streaming, but we were the first radio station to stream all of our stations. We've been streaming at Pacifica, gosh, as long as there's been Internet, for a minute. So they sort of, you know, had that technology, had some people in the network. Technology was on the way, and they were out there with it. So, yeah, you can stream my show online on Sundays, Pan-African Journal, at 8 p.m. Central Time, and I'm also the executive producer of a national show called COVID, Race, and Democracy. I was able to take my issues, again, getting back to that board. There were some board members online, in our network that I knew, and I continued to lobby them and told them, look, COVID is here. It's not going anywhere based on my research. We need to address this as a national level. And we met for many, many months. Governance takes time. We met for about 3 months, and I was so agitated and annoyed because I wanted it to happen, like, within moments, and it didn't. It took us 3 months to get approval, to plan it, and the show has been on for almost a year now, and I'm one of three executive producers of that program, which is called, again, COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'll send a link to you, Brother Lee, because I just executive produced a show exclusively dedicated to our brother Mumia Abu-Jamal, and I will be circulating that show again on his birthday, which is April 24th.
And for our listening audience, if you'd like to get in touch with our Sister Hope and find out more about their program, feel free to email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. mphradio@yahoo.com. We'll put you in touch. We will forward the information to you. Please contact us through that network. Sister Cool, job well done as always. And I thank you, a little modest about your program. For people who haven't heard of the program, Pan-African Journal, we must tell you, not only you must hear it, but you also must support it. It's excellent. Every Sunday evening at 8 o'clock Central Time, check it out. And what's your number and station again where they can hear that program? Sister Cool.
Oh, it's 90.1 FM Houston, or you can go on to kpft.org, kpft.org, Sundays at 8 p.m. Central Time. You can just click on Pan-African Journal and hear some of the episodes. We have some of everybody on our program as well. Due to COVID, though, you know, our rhythm is a little different because our station is not open. And more importantly, my national work can be heard at covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. All of my national shows are posted there on Cicely Tyson, on George Floyd. The anniversary of his death is coming up, I believe, May 24th or 25th. Community ready for that, you know, because we need to really examine what has happened and what is happening. Because, you know, if you guys don't know this, George Floyd grew up in Houston about 15 minutes away from our station, and I lived right around the corner from George Floyd, didn't know it at the time, and lived in the area, Third Ward, for 70 years, right around the corner from where he grew up, and he went to school at Jack Yates High School. So we'll be talking more, not just about George Floyd, but all the men and women who have, and families who have left behind to fight this situation that they're dealing with regards to their loved ones and just fight for justice. So, again, kpft.org or 90.1 FM, Houston, Sundays, 8 p.m., and covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. And, Brother Lee, you're right. You know how I am. You guys, I let my work speak for itself. It's just very difficult to, you know, be on the air and with you and say, okay, you need to listen to me.
and we very rarely do this, sister. We very rarely do this, but in your case, you have earned this respect. to our supporters and listening audience at NPH Radio. The sister does a lot of work on a volunteer basis. As a journalist, we all can use support. So if you would like to support her, how can we do that, Sister Sakul?
Well, I do have a PayPal. That's right. I do have a PayPal. It's under Amandala Productions at gmail.com. Oh, you guys can, you know what, you guys can just email me, and I'll tell you that. It's you can email me at panafricanjournal@gmail.com. All lowercase, panafricanjournal, A-F-R-I-C-A-N, panafricanjournal@gmail.com. I'm really terrible on that. You know, I know many of these independent shows that are online, they've got their Vimeo, their Cash App. Sometimes, you know, we're out here and out here doing what we do, and you just continue to do the work, and you look around, and you're like, oh my God, I don't have a platform up asking for support. So that's, I suppose, Brother Lee, thanks for reminding me that might be the next level of work that I need to focus on to get something in place for people who want to donate, because we do volunteer at Pacifica. There are people who get paid, but our station is not part of the union here in Houston. They fought against it. Other Pacifica stations, many journalists are paid for their work, but not here in Houston.
And we want to correct that, Earl. When you work for the people have a responsibility to support those who work for them. So, Sister, on that note, we'd like to thank you for coming in today and filling out missing page of history as relates to Stop the Dismantling of Free Speech of Pacifica. If anything come up, feel free to contact us. And again, we'd like to thank you on behalf of MPH Radio.
Well, thank you, Brother Lee, and I want to remind the audience to definitely embrace the work of Gil Scott-Heron, whose birthday was April 1st. Marvin Gaye's birthday was April 2nd. He died on April 1st. And also that great warrior spirit of Randy Weston, who, his birthday was April the 6th. And Randy Weston, African Rhythms, they even named the street after him in Harlem. Elombe Brass and others were responsible for that. And so hopefully, in the near future, I can be on to talk about Randy and Oscar Brown Jr., many of these greats that I've had the opportunity to interact with and present them in Houston to my audience of 5,000-10,000 people that came out to see them perform. It was absolutely incredible.
You know, I actually had a chance to meet Oscar Brown Jr. and spend a weekend with him when he came to Richmond years ago. And he's a funny guy. He's
funny. He came to Houston twice, and he said in his entire career of 40 years, he had never been invited to come to Texas. So Houston, we were the first group to invite him here.
Okay, but anyway, since on that note, we'd like to thank you, and let's stay in touch. We're going to take a quick station break, music with a message, and when we come back, we're going to close this program out with a discussion on this concept of what's the importance of having a white wife. That's right. The word on the street is that people are talking about the statement where we had a young man who made a statement, I have a white wife. We'd like to talk a little bit about that, examine that a little bit in terms of its significance. So we'll be right back to listen to MPH Radio.
Choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me.
with just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you held your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors.
That's right. That's still the question today in the 21st century. People are asking, if you had a choice of color, which one would you choose? Speaking of that, recently out on the streets, the people are talking, and we'd like to get your perspective on this, or what they are talking about. The people are talking as relates to recently there was a young man, Herbert Davis, who recently became the first African coach of the University of North Carolina basketball team. In his press conference and his acceptance speech, he made an interesting statement that has the whole world mesmerized in terms of why was there a need to express this particular thought. Now, the statement he made was, "I'm proud that my wife is white." Let me repeat that. Everyone can see his wife. His wife is European. And he made a statement in his presentation, out of the blue, "I'm proud that my wife is white. My wife is white." Now, given this is in the state of North Carolina, given what's going on now, dealing with the Black Loud music, the rise of white supremacy, given the historical impact of racism on our people, people are talking. What is this all about? Why would a brother, for the first time, being the first African to be a head coach of a major university of North Carolina, why was it important to make the statement that he has a white wife? There are so many issues and angles one can approach this. Was it from a psychological perspective, sociological perspective, looking at how racism can institutionalize, racism can impact a people, a person's thought? I mean, it's the all kind of angles one can speak to. But as part of our missing pages, we would like to just raise it with some of our participants on today's program. Just get their thought. We'll go to Susan. We'd just like to, as an African woman, we'd like to get her perspective on when she heard the statement that here you have a brother who everybody thought was very positive, the first African male to head up a basketball team at the University of North Carolina, where he made a statement, "I'm proud that my wife is white." What is your response to that, Susan? What came to your mind, Susan?
First thing that came to my mind is that he offended all black women. Guaranteed, I know you can love your wife regardless of the color or whatever, but the thing of it is, for him to come out and make that statement when it had nothing to do with the ability of him get that we know of his ability to get that particular position. So it was unprovoked, and it was extremely weird and unnecessary. Because he just took us back to the stage of Jim Crow. Or did he say it? One question I ask myself, did he say it because he was looking for job security? It's just hard to really know where his mindset was when he decided to make that statement.
Well, May, let's go to Alex. Before we go to Alex, I say probably that statement probably going to be one of the most remembered statements since the 21st century, since someone came for Rodney King after he was just about murdered, and he responded to, "Why can't we all get along?" So, Brother Alex, give me your thought. When you first heard the statement, "I'm proud that my wife is white," what came to your mind? How did you react to that particular statement, Brother Alex?
Well, Mr. Lee, being a Carolina fan since I hope from birth, I bleed Carolina blue. And to hear a fellow player, student, assistant coach, get up and make such a profound statement made me think that, you know, sometimes when we say things, maybe they don't come out of our mouth the way that we want them to. And we have to look at what's behind the statement. Was the statement made so to inflame black women, as to say they're not good enough? Was it made to be accepted by the white community to say that I've arrived, I'm one of you? There are so many different things that can be taken from that statement. But the most serious thing is that he was apologizing for being black. When we have to lower our own standard, not just to say that I'm proud of my wife, I'm proud of my fiance, I'm proud of my girlfriend, I'm proud of my friend, and we have to enlighten it and say I'm proud of my Asian friend, I'm part of my white friend, I'm part of whatever nationality, is stepping outside of bounds. And that's a bounds of morality. Because all women are beautiful, regardless of what color they are. We should elevate them anyway, but they do not have to be elevated by race. Love is one of the most tremendous things that we can have in life. And to love ourselves is so important for us to go on in our everyday life. So if I can't be accepted or earn a position because I've been there long enough, I have the training, I have the experience, if my character does not put me in that position, then I don't have to be elevated to say, oh, I have a white friend. Oh, I have a white wife. Oh, I have a white whatever to get me to be accepted by someone who hasn't accepted me for over 400 years. As of my opening letter, I said that Mr. Floyd, in his agony, told the cops two or three times, I'm a good guy. Hubert Davis was trying to tell the world, I'm a good guy. I'm not like the rest of them. I have a white wife. That's what I saw in the statement. I'm a good guy regardless what. I don't have to tell anyone that anybody white can do anything for me that I can't do for myself. I take pride in myself, in my people, but I also take pride in every other race that's out here because I know that they should have pride for themselves also. So whether they're Indians, whether they're Asians, whatever country they come from. But we do not have to blast the idea of race that one is supreme above the other. Just do the best job that you can do. That's his only statement he should have made, that I came here as an assistant coach to do the best job that I could do. And I will continue to do the best job that I can do. And let me introduce, if you don't know her, my wife, my family. That's a statement that he should have made. He did not have to signify that relationship. And that's what I would like to say.
And on that note, I'd just like to make this one comment that I know as a coach, and when you have to go on the road to recruit athletes, any of these athletes' parents and mothers who are African and conscious, he can have some serious problems in terms of talking to that mother. Because it says something about his mindset, how he view his people, and how he view his ball players. It opened up the possibility that he too has a certain description of the type of athletes that he will want to have at UNC, and to make sure they will be accepted by his so-called European community. That's my little note on this particular subject. I have a white wife, and we'd like to thank everyone today for participating in this program. Try to stop the dismantling of free speech specifically. We'd like to thank our special guest, Sister Akua Hope. We'd like to thank you, the listening audience, for listening in. And like always, we'd like to say that if you'd like to become a member and fan club for MPH Radio, please email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. Your support is welcome and needed. At the same time, we are open for membership. We want to build this institution so we can do many, many great things for our underserved communities. And we cannot do that without your support and without your participation. We'd like to remind you that this is a program that comes on bi-weekly every Saturday, starting at 1 p.m. And we'd like for you to join us and spread the word. We'll be on the 24th of April. Write that down. Until next time, remember that it's important that we must continue to fill in our missing pages of history. Because if we don't, who will? We will leave you on a sign of conscience that we too are here for all of humanity. We'll see you on the 24th. This has been the voice of MPH Radio.
Y'all. us in the nation. We're no support for education, 'cause right now it don't make sense. Right now